Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Apologize in advance to anybody that goes to our Facebook page and doesn't see sports.
Oh, but yesterday we talked about it and it's fine. I decided to get in on the conversation that's now sports related. And it's out the window.
Day late, dollar short.
Story of my life.
Time now for the play-by-play call of the day.
It's alive behind the Lightning net. Vladimir Nemestikov wins it and counters. If he hurries, maybe an odd-man rush, maybe not. Vladdy down the left wing. It's turning into a 2-on-1. Across the blind, Nemestikov left circle. Shoot! Score! Vladdy! Vladdy! 5-4 Lightning in overtime! A huge comeback win for the Lightning!
I'm not sure who scored again.
Vladdy! Vladdy!
Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure who scored.
Former Hershey Bears play-by-play man Dave Mishkin.
Love that call. That was too good. I have another one, but I love that one so much I couldn't not play it.
I'm going to get Dave on the show here one of these days. I mean, Dave would do it. Go ahead. What's the next one?
Brass cuts into the high slot, dropped into Skinner. Skinner back in front, poked away. Philadelphia on a loose puck, and an odd man break the other way. Voracek with Gostisbehere driving the net. Voracek looks at the net. Beckins, they score! It's Shane Gostisbehere! The kid's done it again! Unbelievable! His third overtime game-winning goal, and the Flyers beat the Canes, this time 4-3.
We've had Tim Saunders on the show twice, the outstanding play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Flyers.
Vladdy! Vladdy!
I love that. That has to be one of the best calls I've heard in a long time.
It's like you doing basketball. Tyler! Tyler! Yeah.
There is a comparison. There might be. Maybe that's why I like it. There might be a comparison there. Yeah.
Tyler! You've done it!
There might be a comparison there.
I can buy
it. They really think about it, but you're right.
They've advanced. I can buy a coffee table. All right, so.
That was a first state playoff game for basketball. All right. They got excited.
They're like, I'm hugging everybody.
It's good. I don't think I've ever held an so long in my entire life.
No, you've never sat over here in this microphone and listened to you talk about the Steelers.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's bring in Dick Girardi. We're talking a little college basketball. DJ, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, what's happening, buddy?
All right. Let's get to Bo Ryan, first of all. All you had to do at the Final Four in Indianapolis was mention one word to him, and that sent him down the road. You just looked at him and said, Chester. What did Chester mean to him, and why was it so easy for him to take off on one word that you mentioned?
Yeah, really everything. That's where he got his basketball education. He played at Chester High. Boy, it's been 50 years ago now. He was the point guard on one of the best teams they'd ever had. And he just has a lot of great memories of the town and of learning the game and follows the school to this day, and everybody knows they've been such a great success in the states and the playoffs and the 4A's for years now, and have had some great players. And yeah, I just think it's his roots, Steve. And it's funny, after I talked to him at the Final Four about it, I went over and asked a couple of his players, And they all talked about how he often brought up Chester to them and like just different life skills and just everything you learn about, not just the game, but about what's going on around you. And, I think it was whenever you talked to Bo, he wanted to talk about his hometown.
No question. How difficult, there are certain jobs that are difficult. How difficult do you think the Wisconsin job has been over the years, and how much easier has Bo made it for his successor now?
Well, he's made it easier and he's made it harder, Steve, because, I mean, Greg Gard's in not an easy spot because Bo is a very, very difficult act to follow. Anybody that knows the history of Wisconsin basketball, other than that blip when Dick Bennett got that very overachieving team to the Final Four in 2000 in Indianapolis, it's a wasteland. I mean, they just really had no success of any kind under any coach. And then Bo Ryan comes in, and I think of all the things he did, Steve, maybe the most impressive is his team was never out of the top four in the Big Ten his entire time. And that just, if you think about it, it's almost impossible. You got to have a bad year. They never had a bad year, and he finished it off, obviously, with the two Final Four teams and a team that came within, probably a Jahlil Okafor getting a fourth foul of winning the national title. If Okafor didn't go out of that game, he couldn't guard Frank Kaminsky. I think Wisconsin would have won, but Coach K's being a smart guy, he brought in a very good defender in Emil Jefferson, and next thing you know, Duke's freshmen are winning the game and the championship for him. But, yeah, it was a wasteland, and Bo's made it into a prime shot.
The staying in the top four is remarkable, not just because of you having a down year, but also the depth of quality teams in the league, which continues this year.
Correct. Yeah, and I think this is probably a year where Wisconsin is finally not going to be in the top four. And part of it's injuries. Obviously, they lost two players in the first round of the draft, in Decker and Kaminsky, and a program guy. I mean, they lost too much finally this time, and they had a player who was declared ineligible by the NCAA that I think they had high hopes for. So, yeah, I'd be shocked if they finish in the top four this year, but certainly Bo has left the program in a lot better shape than it was when he got there.
Let's get to, I was mentioning the depth so far. The first Big Ten game that you and I will see will be Maryland. Have they, to this point, been what you thought they would be?
They've actually been a little better, Steve. I thought maybe a lot of it was hype over last year, but I think it turns out the hype is probably deserved. I just thought Des Wells was going to be too big a loss, but the two transfers and Diamond Stone, the freshman, are all scoring in double figures and have just made up for it and then some. So, yeah, they're really good. They're in the top three of the league. Obviously, Michigan State's number one in the country, and I didn't realize Purdue was going to be this good. And they're going to get a big test from Butler on Saturday in Indianapolis, but they're not just winning games, Steve. They're squashing everybody. Matt Painter's team and Caleb Swanigan is the new name, the player originally committed to Michigan State. That's up at Purdue. But the old holdovers are playing better than they ever had, including Hammonds, who's just been great. So, I think Purdue's top 10 all year long.
Hammonds is the one that I look at. I mean, Swanigan, I think we thought would be really good. But I thought Hammonds was going to leave after his freshman year. I then thought Hammonds was going to leave after his sophomore year. I then thought Hammonds was going to leave after his junior year. Dick, he's still there.
Yeah, he is, and he's gotten better and better. And he wasn't ready. I give him a lot of credit, because especially big guys, they get talked into leaving. Well, he's going to be ready this time. And I would think he's going to be I don't know where he'll get drafted, because the longer you stay in school, the further you fall in the draft. That's how it works. It's all potential now. But yeah, I think those three teams have kind of separated a little from the pack, but it's a pretty strong pack nevertheless.
When you were at the Breeders' Cup, which took place this year at Keeneland, it also afforded you the opportunity to go over and sit down with Rick Pitino. It afforded you an opportunity to sit down and sit with John Calipari. In today's media, Dick, and writers, and you come from the old school, which you've adapted to the new school. Has there been a loss of trust? I mean, there's a line between reporter and subject, but if there's some trust between the two, you can get a lot out. Has some of that been lost over time?
A lot of it, Steve, just because of the instant information age, and everybody's into the gotcha questions rather than trying to get like an in-depth interview to actually find out something. And, yeah, I think trust is huge. Those are two coaches that I've known for a long time, and I could get in there, and they knew I didn't necessarily have an agenda. I just had some questions and trying to find out what was going on in certain things, and they were open to sitting down, and I think they respected that I had I was doing my job, and I certainly respect that they were doing theirs. But, yeah, no, there's a huge amount of trust that's been lost, and it's frustrating because it carries over sometimes when it shouldn't, but that's just the reality we're dealing with in 2015.
How long does it take to really develop that? It's obviously a case-by-case basis, but does longevity and body of work, does that really come into play where you can call and you're going to, quote, get an audience with someone because there's a respect?
Yes, yes, and yes. Yeah, yeah. Those are the three words, Steve. Just, I mean, body of work, longevity, and some respect. And the first two give you the third. So, yeah, no, that is it. And again, it's harder. I mean, like, you know, I've known Calipari for 25 years, and he said to me, he said, look, I don't need you. Not in a bad way. He just says, I don't need any publicity. And he's right. He doesn't. And maybe back in the day, he would have been calling me or somebody else to get on the radio or do an interview. But he doesn't need that anymore. So that was nice. And I like guys that have been around for a while because they tell you stuff. They have a perspective. And you know what else? They don't care anymore. They just don't really care what they say. And I love that.
Offensively, the rules that we've seen, it was a couple of years ago, you said that John Adams, who was the head of officiating at the time, said, I want to see 1,000 games, and then we'll take some data, and then go from there. And they ended up reverting back. What's the data telling us this year about scoring, because they want it to be up so badly?
Yeah, scoring is up to about 75 points a game, which is terrific, given where it was last year. Some conferences are over 80. The ACC and the Big 12 are over 80. Now, keep in mind, a lot of that is due to the fact that they're playing guaranteed games at home against teams where they can score 110. So we'll know a little more, obviously, when the conference play starts. And the scoring is going to come down in that. I don't think anybody doubts that. But yeah, I think overall it's been good. I think it's a good idea. I think the game had gotten stagnant. I don't think there were enough possessions. I think defense had overrun offense, and I don't think that's really the way the game was supposed to be played. Call a foul a foul. And so I think we're heading in the right direction. Not there yet. I mean, I'd like it to look a lot more like the NBA does now, where there's a lot less physicality. I mean, they cleaned that game up about 10 years ago, and now you look at it, and you watch teams like Golden State, San Antonio, and you go, you just marvel at the skill and the execution and how wonderful the game looks.
What other steps, if any, can they take on the college level to make it look a little bit more like that? Certain things you can't do. Let's take, for example, a flopping issue. Well, you can't find kids. Okay, so
right,
that's why you can't do that. But what can they do rules-wise to give it more of that passing shooting flow that you were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things if I can do. One of them is never going to happen, but the other one I think can happen. Make the offensive foul something from the Jurassic era. It's not an offensive foul unless everybody in the gym knows it's an offensive foul.
Right.
That way you'll get rid of the flopping immediately. You'll have guys actually playing one-on-one defense instead of trying to run over and jump under somebody who's already in the air and already in their move. I just think that's really detracted from the game over the last 30 years, and it's been rewarded. And I think the people that run the game understand that. The second thing I would do, and this isn't going to happen, but I would get rid of the high ball screen just to open up the floor and just make it illegal. I understand that's never going to happen because it's just become a way of life. But I just think too many times the floor gets clogged up. And if it was just more, it was just one-on-one, let's see if I can beat you, I think it would just be a better day.
How often have you and I looked at a high ball screen and the first thing the two of us thought or mentioned was that you were bringing a double team into play?
Correct. Yeah, and look, a lot of it is due to the coaches want to get a slower, bigger player switched into a smaller, quicker player. I get that. Just, it's a matchup thing. And look, the NBA does it. I mean, they run high pick and rolls possession after possession. But, yeah, I just don't like it. But it's not going anywhere. There's nothing to do about that. But the offensive foul, I think they could do it correctly if they really want to.
You and I will kid back and forth about buildings that we've been in, worked in. And yes, it is true. I will never catch you. Right, enough. Enough on that. But we see a lot of modern buildings. I have probably done now, I don't know, 20, 30 games in the Palestra. You're in the Palestra Hall of Fame. What is it about buildings like that, and how much will college basketball lose if buildings like that don't exist in 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, a lot. I think the good news is the Palestra is not going anywhere. I don't think Cameron Indoor Stadium at Duke is going anywhere. I don't think Allen Fieldhouse is going. And there are three of my favorite on-campus arenas. Look, Duke could probably build a 20,000-seat arena and sell it out. They're not going to do it. They've had an opportunity to do it. It would lose a lot, and I would never want to see it happen. And the difference with these places and the modern arenas is you can smell the history, you can feel the history, and you can see it. Like if you wander around Saturday night at the Palestra, if there's some Penn State fans there for the Drexel game, just wander around the corridors. I mean, it's just awesome. I mean, the concourses are filled with the history of the players and the coaches that have been in the building. And, I mean, from Wilt Chamberlain to Kobe Bryant, I mean, great high school players and college players. It's just been an amazing place. And, we're losing something when we keep building these antiseptic arenas.
When you were at the Hoops Club, you were asked about your first experience in there. Was going to the Palestra always a goal of yours that you wanted to go, or it's because your buddy said, hey, let's go, you got to see this? And then
I wanted to go. As you know, my oldest brother went to St. Joe's, and
sure.
He brought stories back to Baltimore about what it was like to be in the building, and I never got to go there when he was there. So I always wanted to go, and then I had high school friends who went to Villanova and said, you really need to come up here and see it. When I was at Maryland, I don't remember exactly when, it was sometime in the 70s. I remember going up there and just going, whoa. And that was right in the heyday of the Big Five. The 60s and the 70s were the best years of the Big Five. I mean, there were just great teams year after year. What I remember is we had four tickets for five people, but somehow we all got in.
That's okay. And Rec Hall would be one ticket and five people and all five.
Right. Yeah. I'm told later, like Fred Duffy and some people have told me later, there were a lot of different ways to get into the Palestra if you did not have a ticket.
Yeah, there are a lot of different ways to get into Rec Hall. That's why the attendance was never right in there. What does it say to you, Dick, as somebody who walked in and went, whoa, as somebody who had been going to Cole Fieldhouse at Maryland at the time?
Yeah, man, Cole was a great place. Cole was just bigger. I mean, it held 14,500. It was, when it was built in the 50s, it was the biggest arena of its kind on the East Coast. And you walked in at Cole Fieldhouse. You walked in, as you know, you saw it last year. You walk in from the top.
Yeah.
So you walk, it's not really like, it's sort of like, it's like the Big House at Michigan where you walk in at the top and look down and see everything. The Palestra, you walk in at the bottom and look up.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Right.
Or you're in the middle. I guess the main gate, you're sort of in the middle concourse where half of it's above you, half of it's below you. But I think the first time I walked in was came into one of the end zone portals, and it just sort of all exploded in front of you. In front of it was the court. You looked down, there was some seats. You looked up, you looked around. And my memory is it was a Saturday night game, fairly late in the season, and there was a game before the, and I don't remember who was playing other than Villanova, but typically back then, Steve, what they did was there was a Big Five team would play a visitor, and then two Big Five teams would play. So there were three of them that would play on the same night, and it was, the first game was in progress, and it was a sensory overload, just the noise and everything, and
yeah.
that's what I remember from the night.
I remember the first game I did in there was December 14th, 1982. And Penn State was playing St. Joe's. It was going to be their first game in the Atlantic 10 and played in there. And I remember walking in for shoot-around with Dick Carter, and the tennis courts were in front of the building.
Yep.
And Dick said, you know, Steve, I used to be the JV tennis coach at Penn. And all I kept thinking was, and that's how you end up with McEnroe. No.
It's interesting. For the people that haven't been there in a while, the tennis courts are gone. They've done a complete refurbishment of everything in and around the Palestra, inside the building, outside the building. which, as you know, Steve, is right next to the historic Franklin Field, right, where the Penn Relays are. Chuck Bednarik played for Penn, and the Eagles won their 60 championships. So, yeah, but just the outside is completely different. They've really done a good job of modernizing it, and they've modernized the inside, but the feel of it is still the same.
Yeah, sure is. Dick, thanks so much. I'll see you tomorrow.
You got it, Steve. Look forward to it. See you, buddy.
Dick Girardi. We'll come back with more in a moment. Kevin on Star Wars helmets, which means all the sports people can check out here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
All of these wish lists say they want a new Kia.
No worries, Jingle. It's the Holidays Hot Off Sales Event at Sunbury Motors Kia.
I wanna see you in a Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia can fill everyone's wish list with a new Kia. It's Kia's Holidays on Us sales event. Just listen to this gift from Sunbury Motors Kia. No payments until May.
You heard right, May.
Plus 0% financing for up to 66 months on 2015 Optimus and 2016 Serenos, Sportages, Souls, and Fortes. Remember, all new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. So go ahead, overspend on presents for the family, because you'll still be able to get a brand new Kia from Sunbury Motors Kia with 0% financing and Sunbury Motors' incredible pricing.
And not have to make a payment until May.
The holidays are on us.
At Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, retailer, or go to kia.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Ah! Vladdy! Vladdy!
TJ for the win! Good!
Maybe there is a reason I like that call so much now that you mention it, Steve.
All right, so replay that again.
Maybe there is a reason I like that call so much.
Yeah, maybe. Wow. I feel like it's Schwarzenegger and DeVito and twins. All right. Okay. Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin's been driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week.
Yeah, with a great deal, too. The GDI engine in the 2015 Ford Focus Coupe is actually really fun. Actually, I don't even know if it classifies as a coupe because there's four doors on this, but it is a hatchback. And with fog lights and some other great features, including the telescopic tilt steering wheel, it is a very comfortable vehicle and a very fuel-efficient vehicle, too. We're talking about a back-and-forth, you know, around-town type mileage right at 30 miles to the gallon. You can't beat that. And the best part is it's a sporty little vehicle. It's fun to drive, and you're going to get $4,700 off the sticker price. That puts it right around $1,800 or a little bit below. You can qualify for at least $3,750 off the sticker price if you go with 0% financing for up to 60 months and 1.9% for 72 months. But here's the little issue. It is the only one right now offering $4,750 or $3,750 off, depending on which way you go with the financing, with this special Ford promotion that's going on through right now through the holidays. Find out more about it, and you can see this vehicle starting tomorrow in person at Sunbury Motors Ford, North 4th Street in Sunbury. You can see more on my Facebook page, at Kevin Herr on Twitter, and, of course, at sunburymotors.com. But, again, only one of these vehicles available with up to $4,750 off the sticker price.
Tomorrow, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. We'll have Ken Summers from the Arizona Republic. We'll have Nikki Javala from the Denver Post and Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle, talking Penn State football, Broncos Steelers, and Eagles Cardinals.
And the cool thing is we're talking about it from the other side this time.
Yes, doing it from the other side this time. Yeah, who you're facing. Let's see. I'm looking at your Star Wars helmets here. Oh, brother. Okay. All right. Raiders, Chiefs. Looks like an Ewok.
Broncos, Ravens. The Bengals are these Zabricks. Browns are the Jawas. The Steelers are the who knows. The Wookiees.
Right. Yeah, I like the Raiders helmet, though, with instead of the skull, you know, it's a Darth Vader, and they call it the Vaders.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Now, to me, the reach, though, was the Colts. Did you see the Colts?
Yes.
They said because they wear all whites, they look like they wear all white. A lot of times they look like stormtroopers. That was a little bit of a reach for me.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Anybody else? The Watos? I don't know what that is.
Well, some of these are small characters that if you hadn't seen more than one movie, you wouldn't know.
Yeah, the one I saw was 39 years ago. So if R2-D2 isn't in here, I have no idea.
No, R2 is not in there. And that's not one on the list. And you can see this full list on our Facebook page, by the way.
And 3CPO. There's no 3CPO either.
No, C3PO.
Oh, whatever. You know,
okay. You know, Jennifer Wakeman's in here with me, and she's actually seen a couple of Star Wars movies. So
it's a tin can in gold. I mean, what? Come on.
No. The tin can is R2-D2.
Oh, God.
A walking tin can, though. I think he was referred to as a walking tin can.
Well, good. And Jennifer's gone to these movies?
Yes, she's seen all 9 of them as well.
Has she really? Good for her. That's great. Well, that's coming up. You're going Sunday?
Yes, I'm going Sunday.
And when's Jennifer going?
She has not found a someone to go along with yet. Our times didn't work out to go along together, so.
Okay.
All right, I didn't invite her. That was the real reason. Let's be honest.
Oh, God.
Steve, she said what? She's more than willing to take you with her.
Okay, I'm in. It's like going to an event, right?
Right. But you do dressing up is optional.
No, I'll wear clothes. All right.
I would hope.
Oh, you mean like a character?
Right. Dressing up, bringing a lightsaber or a blaster or, you know, something like that. That's optional.
Are you going as a character?
No. I will not be. My lightsaber failed to saber many years ago.
Okay.
Well, they used to make them they were like a flashlight with an inflatable tube when they first came out. And you could hit things with it, and it wouldn't hurt because it's an inflatable tube. Well, our poodle did not find me waving it around being very entertaining. And let's just say the poodle took care of the inflation part of it from that point forward. I never hit the dog with it. I just waved it around, and the dog didn't like the idea.
Okay. And is Jennifer going in character?
No. She wouldn't. That's no.
Too classy?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's too classy.
Well, there's no such thing as too classy. So, time now for our sports bozo of the day. And it goes to the guy who was skiing, dressed as Chewbacca, flying down the mountain blind in a Chewbacca suit.
How did I miss this one?
He wasn't skiing, he was snowboarding. Ah, the heck do you say? I mean, my goodness. That is the outdoor sport bozo of the day. As I said, there was going to be no small number of candidates every day for this segment. You have to kind of weed your way through them.
Snowboarding in a Chewbacca outfit. I mean, at least you'll stay warm.
Absolutely. Everybody's staying warm. It's going to be 60 degrees on Christmas Day.
I saw that. I'm not complaining, but mind you, but instead of White Christmas, maybe we need to play Melikaliki Maka from now on.
Okay, so she's gone to all nine. You've gone to all nine.
Yes.
Right.
And we have all 32 helmets on our website.
Okay, now is she around?
No, she had to actually go back into the newsroom now.
She has to work, huh?
Yes.
What was the
one of us has to work here, you know?
Yes. Yes. What was the best one you saw?
Episode 3.
That means nothing to me.
Yeah, episode 3 was the best one of the bunch.
Why? I watched the Academy Awards, it got nothing.
Well, the reason it was the best one is the one Revenge of the Sith told the actual story of how Anakin Skywalker becomes Darth Vader and how he completes the transition to the dark side.
Oh, well, there you go. Sounds pretty exciting. Are there any car chases in it?
Well, yeah, I was going to say there's speeder races. Lots of ship to ship fighting.
Well, what was her favorite movie?
What was your favorite movie? She said Return of the Jedi or Empire Strikes Back. Probably Empire.
Oh, okay. More traditional as opposed to you going off the rails over something new. All right. My favorite was Star Wars 1.
The power of the dark side.
No, I've seen Ohio State football.
That was good. Yes.
All right. Well, okay, so she likes Empire Strikes Back. You like Episode 3, which, okay.
Yeah, Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith. Okay.
Plus, there's nothing better than a lightsaber battle on a lava planet. I mean, come on.
All right, Cardinals time. Could be the last game in St. Louis. Kevin, at the beginning of the show, kind of blew it off. Why? Why did you blow it off that it might be the last game in St. Louis? Franchise instability is not... I think every league strives for franchise stability. What allowed the AFL to make it and force a merger with the NFL? Because they came up with an idea in 1959 and utilized it in 1960 about revenue sharing off a national TV contract so they could keep everybody healthy. There should not be a need to move a team in the NFL because everybody is financially healthy. I mean, who loses money in the NFL with the TV contract they have? It's really hard to do. I mean, what kind of hardship does St. Louis have? You have people who are willing to build a stadium for you. City, the state, whole deal.
I'm just saying if I was a St. Louis fan or if I lived in St. Louis, I would be concerned about that. I don't know. I don't know. I find it strange that St. Louis would want to move if you're actually, you know, you got a nice stadium, or it would appear so. I've never been there. Your crowd and fan base is supporting your team. I just don't see them as moving. I understand what you're saying. I just don't know why you'd want to move.
He wants to move. He's an L.A. guy. And he has the land at Hollywood Park.
Well, it's not like that team hasn't been there once.
No, but if you want to take them back to their roots, move them to Cleveland.
That's true.
$100 million revenue club. 14-15, college. Texas revenue last year, $179.6 million. Ohio State second, $170.9 million.
Alabama third, 150.6 million in revenue. LSU 138.9. Oklahoma 135.7. Michigan 132.3. Florida 130.8. And in the number eight position, Penn State 127.9. Then it's Auburn, Wisconsin, Tennessee, Notre Dame 121.3. Florida State, Kentucky, Arkansas, Georgia, South Carolina, Michigan State, A&M, Stanford, Iowa, Baylor, USC, Minnesota, Louisville, Nebraska, Washington. And last in the $100 million revenue club is Kansas, $103.3 million.
Steve, got Rick on the line from New Columbia has a question for you about some of the things going on at Penn State in the way of renovations.
Okay, sure. There's not much to say, but go ahead.
Okay. Am I on?
Yes, you are, Rick.
Okay. I called because I think I know the most favorite question. I'm a longtime listener that Coach Joe got from a fan. And I was listening one night, and this lady came up to him and asked him, are they ever going to switch over to artificial turf at Penn State?
Right.
And Joe went over on a rant, and he just literally enjoyed answering that question. He went on a rant of how he has the best turf man in the world here at Penn State and everything. And it took him a while to really, all the praise he had for the turf man and the turf. But the bottom line is that when he was done answering the question, to answer hers, he said, yes, the maintenance costs on turf has really risen a lot, and they have improved artificial turf so much that we will switch over to artificial turf. And I was going to call in when you were talking about facilities, and it doesn't sound like it's in the plans to go for artificial turf. Is it still in the plans, or... I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Well, Rick, actually, when he was talking about artificial turf, he was talking about the practice fields and switching over. And they did. They switched over one practice field. They have two outdoor grass fields and one artificial practice field and one indoor artificial practice field. So all that was switched over. That was all switched over from AstroTurf to field turf, and they switched those over. When they had a meeting about Beaver Stadium initially, Herb Combs, who's the man you're talking about right now, who's in charge of the field at Beaver Stadium, he's adamant he wants to keep it natural. He's adamant he wants to keep it natural grass.
Okay. I was just wondering about that, because not really that I'm curious about artificial turf, but Coach Joe, an answer, he really liked answering that question. He said, yes, that they have improved artificial turf so much that someday, just to go with the maintenance costs, that they are going to switch over. And I could see that, by the way it sounds with facilities, it doesn't sound like it's in the plans to really switch over to artificial turf yet. I'll hang up. It was just interesting to me that... I wonder about that forever.
Yeah. Yep, it's very interesting, but I think the plan right now is to keep it grass in the stadium.
Okay, so we're not going to have bands out there practicing and ruining the turf anytime soon. To really rent out Beaver Stadium when it's not football, and it's not, it's really only going to be used for football yet. There's not going to be no soccer in there and all kinds of different stuff messing with the turf then.
Probably not at least initially. And what happened, I'll tell you what tears up a turf more than anything else is actually a concert. They tear up turf more than anything else.
So besides football, then, they're just going to make money with football right now, and that's it?
As of right now, let's see. Yeah, let's see what the populist guys recommend, but I think that the game plan is still to go with grass in there.
Okay. Well, thanks for answering my question. I enjoy your show here, and I just thought it was a good time to call in. I was going to call about that earlier, but thanks a lot.
Appreciate you listening and the call. It's excellent. Thank you, Rick. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, fun tomorrow. Nikki Javala, Denver Post on the Broncos Steelers, Kent Summers, Arizona Republic on Cardinals Eagles, Rich Scarcella on Penn State in the bowl game, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, Kevin on lightsabers. It's complete.
We've come full circle.
And we're into the seventh circle of